Somebody at work had one of those quiet moments of conversation with me today where they were clearly getting ready to ask a serious question. And they turned to me and they said, with going to church like you do every week more than once, don't you get bored with it? It's only one book. Don't you think you know it by now? And he was clearly asking it in a sincere way. So I tried to think quick about my different ways other than just a no answer. And I said, do you get bored with going out with your wife for a date? It's a challenge to us sometimes. because I just mentioned quickly, it is a relationship. I didn't mean going out with you for a date is a challenge. that our relationship with God is a relationship, and it's one that we should be wanting to spend time in and to keep growing in. So when we come to Bible passages, I'm not sure that with my speaking you will get to the depths of everything that a Bible passage is trying to teach you. I think John often does a better at going a little bit deeper in some of it. I try and stick it at the level that I can remember it afterwards and take home. So I think you get a good stereo effect in that situation. So we're going to try and do that again with this week's passage. So here we go. Here's a statement to get us going. A good man is hard to find. You might think that's got nothing to do with the Bible. I think you could argue that's got everything to do with the Bible. A good man is hard to find. Quite profound, that, the more you think about it. But let's address the ladies. Ladies, it's time to tell you, you need a new man. You need a new man. I could be in trouble here, couldn't I? could be different people wanting relationship counselling. Well, let's see. If you feel like you need a new man, what kind of a new man might you like? I found these little statements down there. One who promises to give you laugh lines when you're old. One who tells you he's proud of you on a daily basis. One who puts your happiness on the same level as his. One who uses positive superlatives when describing your relationship. One who uses when, not if, when talking about his future and how you fit into it. Do you need a new man? A lot of us get into a situation where we are looking at what we think our future partner should be. And we might even end up in a situation where we think, or we are wishing, what our present partner might become. And we're looking forward. So I have some video talks that I have tried desperately to get my daughters to listen to that counsel them to think about relationships. And it's by a guy called Andy Stanley, an American preacher. And he, every couple of years, revamps a series that he does, which is basically aimed at young adults and on love, dates, and heartbreaks. He's often what he titles his series. And one of the talks that he gives in there is particularly about the myth of the right person. On that desperate search to find the right man, what does the right man look like? I've said you need a new man. What does the right man look like? And the basis of his message is this. Spend your time trying to become the best future partner rather than looking for them. Because we so often have that shopping list of what we want the other person to be. But he says the best way to prepare yourself for a future long-term relationship is to make sure that you are becoming the best future partner for someone else. So he talks about their purity of life. He talks about debt and the different things that we all bring to our relationships. Everything that's been us up until now, that will shape us going into our relationships. And he challenges them, rather than have the list of what you want of the other person, have the list of where you need to change and be better. So how is that going to introduce us to the topic of Ephesians? Well, let's read Ephesians 4 and see how that might speak to us. So Ephesians 4, verses 17 to 24. Now this I say and testify in the Lord, that you must no longer walk as Gentiles do, in the futility of their minds. They are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of ignorance that is in them due to their hardness of heart. They have become callous and have given themselves up to sensuality, greedy to practice every kind of impurity. But that is not the way you learned Christ. Assuming that you have heard about him and were taught in him as the truth is in Jesus, to put off your old self, which belongs to your former manner of life and is corrupt through your deceitful desires, and to be renewed in the spirit of your minds, and to put on the new self, created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. Those are our verses for today. So, back to the first thing I said to you, a good man is hard to find. Let me give you some examples. I watched a film a week or so ago called The Courier. Has anybody else watched The Courier so far? There you go, I'm a minority in my weird film interests. So The Courier is a film about a British businessman who was recruited to become a spy in the former Soviet Empire. He didn't have that background, but he was the person they thought could connect a Russian general who was interested to communicate information to the West. So the film is about his story of how that worked. It gave him a number of ethical decisions to make as he came into that spying world and as he tried to look after the Russian who was giving him information. That's a guy called Greville Wynne. The Russian who was giving him information was a guy called, I can't say any of these names, Oleg Pengospy, who ended up being caught and executed for his spying activity. People who were trying to make the right decisions as to what they thought was best. But it's not easy. How do you be a good man in different situations? What is the right thing to do in different situations? And the sad part for Greville is that after this spy story, which was around the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, he struggled then to go back to normal life. And a lot of people question decisions he made and the honesty of stories he told afterwards. So even if you get some things right, it's hard to stay a good man. It's hard to find a good man. Last person on the list, top right-hand picture, a name that's even harder to say, was a Russian naval commander. Again, at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, he was in a submarine that was off the coast of Cuba, and in the height of the Cuban Missile Crisis, it had been located by some American Navy ships, and they were trying to sort of make them aware that they knew they were there and to make them run away. So they had dropped depth charges either side of the ship, submarine, when the submarine was trying to hide. Trying to make the story simple, the commander actually activated a nuclearly armed missile ready to fire. He needed the consent of three other senior officers to fire that missile. And one of them immediately consented. The man who didn't consent was Vasily, who said, "I don't think they're trying to destroy our submarine yet. They're trying to warn us. I'm not yet giving my consent." If he had given his consent, we probably already would have had the Third World War. it's hard to find a good man. It's hard even to know what it means to be a good man in a situation, which is the right decision. When do we just follow orders that we're given? When do we not follow orders that we're given? When we have to use our own wisdom, where do we find wisdom in that moment to make a decision? So we've already mentioned Ukraine today, and I saw a post on some social media that was talking about President Zelensky's inaugural address. So I did my homework to try and make sure it's authentic, and it is. The only thing I haven't double checked is that the family picture is his family or when it was taken. But this is what he said in his inaugural address. "I do not want my picture in your offices. The president is not an icon, an idol, or a portrait. Hang your kids' photo instead and look at them each time you are making a decision." That's a man who's in a world where very often you are sticking pictures on the wall of those who want to have power over others. A man who came from a celebrity world as an actor, who was probably also used to having his picture put up there. And he said, "Don't put my picture, put the picture of your family, because you're accountable to them in the decisions you are making to be a good man." So let's bring it closer to home. We've had the announcement in the service already. CAP needs a new worker. Ali's doing the life skills course, and as soon as the post went up that they need a new worker, the great encouraging congregation that we are, Carl wrote, "Can we clone Ali? Then we have another awesome person involved, especially with her amazing life skills." Yes, Ali's response is £5 in the post tomorrow. So and others went on to affirm the great ministry that Ali has had. And isn't it great when we see God using somebody to be a good person in a situation like that? So we can marvel not only that we have such a person and that she's in the right ministry for her at this time, but that others can see that and encourage her in it. But I want to announce another campaign today. It's the Don't Clone Ali campaign.
I second that.
I had a feeling some of her family members might be ready to say that. Say no to clones. We don't want another Ali. Why? Okay, there's one selfish reason from Ali. But why am I saying we don't want another Ali? Because each of us are God's original creation. We are, Psalm 139, verse 13 and 14, fearfully and wonderfully made. Jeremiah 29, God has a plan for each one of our lives. He created us perfect. He created us good men and good women. We're the ones who've messed that up, but he hasn't given up. And so what he wants to see is people transformed by him to be that good person in different situations. So we all need to be new men and we all need to be new women, not new Allies, except for Ali. So in the passage we have, Ephesians 4, verse 22 says, "Get rid of your old self." Get rid of your old self. God created you perfect, and you messed it up. You let yourself be driven by selfishness. You let yourself give in to temptation. You let yourself choose to go against what God teaches, to make wrong choices. You let yourself be driven by working out what's wrong with other people instead of working out what's wrong with you. You let yourself be driven by seeking relationships where you want other people to be, and you have a whole list, but you're not too fussed about what you are with them. That's your old self. But the verses that we've read draw the parallel between the old self and the new man. Can you spot the difference? Can others spot the difference? Is it one difference? Is it 10 differences? How easily can they find those differences? The Bible often talks about new men. 2 Corinthians 5:17 says, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creation. Old things are passed away. And you've heard me talk about it from here lots of times. Kind of before, after, or house reform programs, or the restoration programs, where they take something that's no longer in its perfect original state and they bring it back to the condition that it was intended to be in, or they bring it back into, or bring it into the form that's right for the present time and what it was originally intended for. And I think this passage is a very strong challenge to us that that's what we should be. Think again of what's hit me, and I've tried to share with you as we've gone through our verses in Ephesians, that Paul had set this church up. He'd gone on, and now he was arrested and unable to come back here. And as he looked at the challenges the church were facing, he might have said, I need another, well, Ali wasn't there, but I need another somebody just like me, Paul, or I need another leader of this type. I need some kind of superhero who could come in from outside and lead the church in that situation. But that's not what the verses say. What the verses say is the gospel that I preach to you, that we've been looking at when we went through Galatians, that empowers you, that sets you free from the law and the sin and all of these things, mean now in Ephesians, the new man, the person who's needed for this church, is you. Because there's a difference between you when you were struggling as the old person, separated from God and messed up, and you as a new person who God can transform and use to bless other people. New man, old man. Or old man, new man, turn it around the other way. So, some other verses that talk about the new and the old person. Colossians 3:12-14. So as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against you, just as the Lord forgave you, so also you should you. Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. How do we help and encourage each other? Are we a bunch of gossiping, conniving people, quick to laugh at somebody else's failure, quick to highlight what people get wrong, and generally not fun to be around? Or are we those who are filled with a heart of compassion, kindness, humility and gentleness and patience? Are we those, like so many in the world, who identify with what we are calling the old self, which is essentially selfish, self-centered? Or are we ready to be people who say, God's met my needs. I know I'm loved. I know I have value. I don't have to prove myself over other people. I'm in a relationship with my Creator God, and He transforms me that I can be a blessing to each other, free of the need to meet my shopping list, because God has valued me. Romans 6:6. Knowing this, that our old self was crucified with Him, in order that our body of sin might be done away with, so that we should no longer be slaves to sin. And I think of the TV programs that show you people who have a problem with cluttering in their house. So much so that they can't get into some rooms because they've just saved up and put more and more stuff there. And when people come in to try and help them declutter, it's emotionally traumatic for them. They don't want to be separated from the old. Even if they've understood the promise of what's going to come with the help of others to have space opened up to have a new life, they find it hard to walk away from the old. That's Ephesians 4. The old you, the new you. Can we spot the difference? Are you ready to leave the baggage of all the clutter from the past? Or are you clinging onto it and not yet ready to live in the freedom of having that space emptied out? Colossians 3:10. And have put on the new self who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. There's at least three things in that verse. The first one I want to say is that we are being renewed. It's not jump this high, you work at it, you do it. God is working in you to bring about that transformation. It's his power that enables us to move from the old self to the new self. It's his image that we are being transformed into. The image of God. Philippians 2 gives you an example of the characteristics of God. In his humility, born a man, willing to become a man, willing to live among us with the limitations and willing to die on a cross for each one of us. We are in the image of God. Our character should be like that of God, modelled for us in Jesus. That's what we were created for. That's the original us that got messed up. The new person represents what the original intended creation was to be. One of the passages that always hits me the most, I've forgotten to write the I've got the verses here and not the book. It's Luke 24, I think, or 19. I'll have to look that up again. But it goes like this. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those whom you expect repayment from, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them, without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. And then another link back to these verses in Ephesians. Be merciful just as your Father is merciful. Spot the difference. Old self, selfish. Sin limited. Looking for what you get back before you work out what you put in. New self, needs met by God. Able to be transformed because of what God has done for us. Able to show his image in a way that makes us different from other people, a difference that others can spot. We are each made in the image of God. Verse 24 of our passage, put on the new self. You've got that sense of you're deliberately taking off the old self and then you put on the new self. You are created in the likeness of God. So I take you back to some of the questions that are on the sheet in front of you. And I challenge you to think about how you are planning to change in the next 2 years. We're going to see a video that will finish us off and then we'll go straight back to the worship group. But apply the passage, old self, sinful, new self, changed by God, different. Others can spot the difference. Changed with a purpose, because like Paul wanted to see the Ephesians used to touch their community and to bless each other, so God wants to use us as a church to touch our community and to bless each other. Make your plan and let's see that people are able to spot the difference.